think that a lot of the fear around AI, about the stigma, is based on just people not understanding the technology, not knowing really how it works and what it can do and how it can actually aid and help us do our jobs better.
Veritone presents Adventures in AI, the podcast that dives into the many ways artificial intelligence is shaping our future for the better. I'm your host, Megan Minchev, and today we'll discover how deepfakes can be used for good with Executive Vice President of Veritone One, Sean King, voiceover coach Anne Ganguza, and Senior Product Marketing Manager Ashley Bailey. But before we do that, you may have noticed that I'm not Kevin Ells, the usual host of Adventures in AI. Kevin has passed the torch on to me, Megan Minchev, Senior Manager of Social Media and Brand Management at Veritone, and has ventured onto something new. It's bittersweet. I will miss Kevin, but I am excited for his future. So good luck to you, Kevin. This episode is a bit different in that we're sharing with you the audio from the Can Deepfake Be Used for Good webinar, because it is a trending topic and it's something we want to share with people to let them know that yes, synthetic voice can be used for good, especially in the way our newest solution, Marvel.ai, is synthesizing people's voices with their permission. So let's go ahead and tune in now.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for our webinar. This topic, deepfake, has certainly been in the headlines lately. We're excited to talk about this with you and talk about the technology, walk through some definitions. So thrilled to have you here with us. This webinar was pre-recorded, but we are here with you live, and we'll transition to a live Q&A at the end of the webinar. I think most of us are very familiar with webinar platforms, but just in case, we are using GoToWebinar. If you have any questions or anything you'd like for us to address along the way, just pop those in the chat and we'll make sure to get to those. Okay, and so I am Ashley Bailey, Senior Product Marketing Manager for Marvel.ai, our voice cloning solution. And here with me today is Sean King, Executive Vice President of Veritone One, and Anne Ganguza, commercial and narration voiceover coach, and has her own podcast, VO Boss. So let's get into it. Happy to have you here with us today. So I wanted to open up this webinar and kind of talk about a couple of headlines that have been circulating in the news recently. There's been a lot about deepfake, and it seemed to just be even more and more talk about it. There was the CBS News segment a couple of weeks ago on 60 Minutes, the Luke Skywalker, where it was revealed that his voice, the Luke Skywalker voice by the actor, was actually a synthetic voice by our friends over at ReSpeecher for The Mandalorian. So Sean and Anne, I would just love to get some of your quick thoughts and ideas around these two topics.
Sure. Well, I'm happy to start. Look, I mean, I think synthetic media or deepfake, it's here today. It's out there. The technology is here. There's a lot of education, I think, that needs to come on really what this is and what it means. I think there's an unfortunate stigma around the term deepfake. And so that's what, you know, ultimately we can drive a lot of education for, and talking about what that is, a deep fake versus a synthetic clone or synthetic use of a clone for synthetic media. But I think you can see today there are real commercial viable opportunities for synthetic media.
Absolutely. I think that a lot of the fear around AI, as you were mentioning, Sean, about the stigma, is based on just people not understanding the technology, not knowing really how it works and what it can do and how it can actually aid and help us do our jobs better and actually be actually a value add, especially for people in the voiceover industry. I know for a fact that a lot of people fear that, you know, the synthetic voice is going to take their jobs away, but I actually believe that it can enhance an already, you know, successful career by eliminating those jobs that you might not be available for, and for lots of other reasons. I think that it's definitely something that the public needs to be more educated on so that they can make informed decisions on how they can work along and evolve with it.
Yeah, one of the quotes that I pulled from that from the 60 Minutes segment by Nina Schick over on the side here is that the technology itself is neutral. And that really resonated with me. I think it makes a ton of sense and applies to a lot of technology, mostly used for good. Sometimes it is misused. So I really like that. And we'll switch over here and just go through some definitions. So synthetic media, kind of the umbrella, all of these, of course, powered or used and using artificial intelligence, synthetic media being kind of the umbrella. We're talking about audio today, but of course, this is video, applies to video as well. Synthetic voice, that computer-generated human speech, where a voice clone is that authorized and verified custom voice model of a specific individual. Whereas deepfake, as we were just talking about, usually it is with malicious intent. Usually it's a prominent figure, not average citizen, is worrying about this. And it's almost always without consent. In fact, I don't know of a case where consent was involved. So that's definitely one of the biggest differences there. Any other, any color that you would want to add to that, Sean or Anne?
Yeah, I think, again, it all starts with the clone being there first and getting that consent, because once you've had a clone or a custom voice model of an individual, you can use that to create synthetic voice and therefore into synthetic media. But again, it really just starts at the fundamental, like, do you have consent? And kind of to go back to Nina's quote before, like, can be, the technology is neutral. Well, yeah, if having consent is the fundamental difference between a deepfake and a clone. And I really having people understand that if they own their clone or they have control of their clone, and who they authorize to have access to that clone, the control of that is really in the hands of the person's voice. And, for Anne and her, the voiceover community or anyone else in that, like, that's their instrument. And so, being able to have your instrument in your today, as well as a synthetic modality of their other voices, is another incremental tool that they have in their in their arsenal.
Absolutely. I think that it is something that the term deepfake is a scary term. And absolutely, I think in any use of it, if it's, in terms of media, kind of hyping up, what's going on. And I think that it generates that fear, it generates that buzz. But always, just as now I own my voice and I own the rights to my voice, I want to be able to own the rights to a synthetic voice or my AI voice. And I want to be in control as to how and where it gets used. And that really is not just, here, I've made my voice, now I've licensed it to you. It doesn't mean that you can go and necessarily put words into my synthetic voice that I don't represent or wouldn't want to say or have any malicious intent. And I think that's really important that we get, we have that control over the usage, where and how it's being used. And I think that is something that, we're just now starting to really see and try to work those terms out. And I think there needs to be probably, some sort of a standard set, laws, maybe regulations. I mean, there was the case of Bev Standing in the TikTok case, where all of a sudden her voice became, part of the AI voice of TikTok, and it was without her consent and without her knowledge. And so, we're thankful that lawsuit was just settled. And so that actually is a very promising thing that, the right things are being done now in order to safeguard and protect our voices. And I think when we work with any company, we need to make sure to create those voices, because we cannot create an AI voice ourselves. So we need to be partners with companies that are producing those voices and make sure that, we are working together toward a common goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we move on to the next slide, I did want to go through some of these voices. I think many of you who know Ryan Stilberg, what president of Veritone, what his voice sounds like. Some of you have heard him speak at various events or in interviews, but just in case you haven't heard his real voice or doesn't know what it sounds like, this is Ryan Stilberg's real voice.
So you reach deep into your pocket. Sure enough, you have an extra velament. So you look directly at Bob and say, Would anyone else like a Velamint? Velamints, good breath, good day.
And this is Ryan Steelberg's synthetic voice using text-to-speech.
So you reach deep into your pocket. Sure enough, you have an extra Velamint. So you look directly at Bob and say, would anyone else like a Velamint? Velamints, good breath, good day.
And then this is Ryan Steelberg's voice speaking in Spanish using text-to-speech.
La Patagonia es una región en Sudamérica compartida por Chile y Argentina. Tiene montañas, glaciares, lagos y otras
That one is a very relevant use case. I mean, we're working with podcaster right now, we're helping him translate the articles, and then the audio of that is in his custom voice in Spanish. And so it's just, I just love that one. It makes me giddy every single time.
I agree. It kind of makes you giddy, but it also shows it the opportunities that are there and being able to showcase that, look, that's still Ryan's voice, but Ryan being able to extend himself into Spanish language and being able to take the same message and the same and his same brand and be able to extend it there, it's opening up to a new audience. So for like that podcast example that you mentioned, you know, how many more thousands of people are going to be able to consume and listen to it because it's simply there and available in someone's native language? It shows that there's a lot of opportunity here and how it's making that individual that much more broader in their execution capabilities and what they're able to do. And again, all while giving that person the control to be able to decide how and when it is being used.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's more impactful for the audience, like being able to connect. It's just more authentic than, I don't know, a random stock voice, which is also very versatile and can be used in different instances. But in this case, having it be the host voice, I think is very impactful.
I love the accessibility of it and being, you know, as an actor, as a voice actor, I want, you know, I lend my voice to, you know, certain spots that can help people and can really, you know, make a difference. And I feel that making the same voice accessible in, you know, all different languages, it really means a lot to me as an actor to be able to provide that for someone. And I think it really shows some of the real good that having a synthetic voice for yourself can really, you know, make you shine. And help millions of people.
So going another layer deeper into the definitions, and then we'll really get into more use cases. You know, how are synthetic voices actually created? Another definition or a term that we hear a lot is speech synthesis, which is really simply the computer generated production of human speech, where a synthetic voice is used to describe a voice that actually sounds like a real human. And we talked about some of the other definitions too, but I did want to call out the different modalities in the voice process, text to speech and speech to speech. So Sean, could you give a little bit more detail about like when would somebody want to use text-to-speech? When would speech-to-speech come into play?
Sure. Well, first in the creation standpoint, just to kind of touch on what you mentioned earlier, it all starts with training data. You know, we need to have an appropriate amount of data in the form of audio files that can be used to be able to create the different utterances that are in a human's voice that we can use AI and then to create those synthetic models. You know, the outputs of those really give you a few extra modalities, you know, text to speech, where the input is text and the output is the computer generated voice. So for those cases, that could be a whole bunch of different use cases. If you want to take articles to translate to audio files, in the instance where you mentioned what we were doing with the podcast host, we can take their English file, translate it down, convert to text, and then put the output into a Spanish voice. Now, speech to speech is where you're taking a source actor and being able to use the input of someone else's speech to be able to render that in the cloned voice. So for example, I always like to give for this one is you're ever watching soccer and every announcer or broadcaster on soccer screams or says goal differently. It's their trademark. It's their inflection. It's how long the tonality in which they speak, how long they're expressive with it. And so that is very hard to replicate, if not impossible, using text. So this case, all you can have is, for example, you know, Anne being a voice actor could replicate or mimic just how that person speaks. And she can do that in her voice and then make the output can be into that broadcaster's voice or that person that you're trying to clone. So it allows you to almost mimic what they're doing, but actually have it in their actual voice come out.
So that it truly matches. So it really is a lot more realistic.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I would think that the same, I guess the same standards would apply as they would in me having a synthetic voice. Also, if I'm creating a model for a speech-to-speech, you know, source audio, that I would also be able to maintain the rights to that, you know, that model.
So can deepfake be used for good? That is the title of the webinar. Now, we kind of already talked about the differences and the definitions where deepfake, they're not getting, it's not getting consent. It's usually with malicious intent. But what about synthetic voice and voice cloning? And that's what we're really talking about today. It's ethically created and distributed. How can these be used for good? So we've listed some out here, from celebrities and athletes to advertisers and agencies, broadcast and podcasting, education and training, and certainly even public safety. One that's been coming up a lot lately is museums and other, you know, entertainment experiences, and all other industries. So I would love to just have kind of a dialogue about these, any that's been kind of coming up more often, for either one of you.
Well, I think I've heard a lot, you know, education and training, you know, in terms of that really being useful. And I can actually see that, having been a former educator in the system for 20 years. You know, a lot of times there isn't budgets for, you know, every piece of curriculum to be turned into, you know, a voice curriculum. And a lot of times it becomes necessary for accessibility for students. So I can really see that it can be helpful. You know, as much as me, the teacher, says that I really need to be very engaged and that human needs to be there, I think that when there are, you know, institutions or applications where people really need that engagement, they will hire the human. But in the other instances where they need to get a bunch of material out quickly, right, in the event of, let's say, a pandemic, right, and there's curriculum that needs to be at home, I think that AI could really help in generating the volume and generating that's needed for that type of thing. And I think anything really where you need to catch up on the content, right, in a timely fashion, I think that's a really great application for a synthetic voice or an AI voice.
No, I agree, Anne. And really across all the ones listed on the screen here, the ability to help personalize and localize a message across all of these different areas is a huge impact. You know, and just again, to touch on what we were doing with the podcast is here, you know, being able to put it into a different language is making it, you know, more personalized to a group of individuals. But also, look, if you're doing an advertiser or you're a content creator and you're creating these different messages and being able to localize it down to a geographical region, being able to tag it specifically to listeners that may be listening from San Diego versus Dallas or New York, and just being able to have that differentiator is really great. And even looking at even public and government and public safety, you know, there are different, every constituent area is made up of a composition of lots of different groups that are speaking different languages, and being able to provide, you know, that same voice output, but have it being for the same, to the different languages that are going to be in their local area. There's just that ability is really going to help keep that message more authentic. And I mean, it feels weird saying that, you know, synthetic voice or post cloning is helping it be more authentic because it's using a computer generated version of that. But in fact, to someone who is not being able to speak that language or being able to, it is very personal being able to know that that's there in that area. So again, I think, across all of these different examples, localization is an enormous opportunity.
Sure. And I think also, diversity and inclusion. I mean, people can relate better to someone that sounds like them. And I think that's really important in that whole game. I spoke with a gentleman from Create Labs in New York City that is doing wonderful work with AI clone named Clara, who actually is a woman of color. And so he's bringing it around to different schools and educational institutions around the country to make people less fearful of AI. And so Clara answers all these great questions. But I think that absolutely, diverse voices are needed for all of these applications to really make it more localized, as you're saying, and make people feel more comfortable.
And I think also, we talk looking right at the top, celebrities, athletes, influencers, voiceover talents like yourself, the extensibility that it can provide someone. Look, if you have your voice that's made available, there might be opportunities for more passive income that could come from other opportunities where you might not be able to be there yourself, but you can make your voice available for them. I always like to use an example for like an athlete. If you're a Russell Wilson, your brand is at an all-time high while you're probably in season, but your accessibility to be able to do things is probably at its lowest than it is throughout the other times. So just being able to have that at your disposal for your team or someone that you've granted consent to be able to have access to it for particular use cases, you've now made more opportunities for yourself by having, control over your clone.
Yeah, and I think a lot of voice talent would say, well, I don't know of a case where I'm that busy that I can't voice something. But to be honest, I think really there are sometimes seasons, there's highs and lows, as in with any, I think maybe freelance artistic business. And I think that until that happens, right now they won't realize how much they could have done. And now that they have, if they have an AI or a synthetic voice, then it can be, wow, I can be doing these phone prompts while I'm actually working on an audiobook that's, requires a lot of the human element of the emotion of it. And so, yeah, I think that is something that we might have to convince the voice talent a little bit more about that. But yeah, I can see that now where I'm not available. As a matter of fact, I'm getting over a cold. And so for that time, I'm not available for a week or two. And, I've got people waiting, for me to get better. And so maybe that would be an opportunity at the time to use something like a synthetic voice to be able to do the job for me.
Yeah, that's actually a great segue. I was thinking about that a lot, actually, since we talked last week and you were sick.
Yep.
I was like, she relies on her voice.
Oh, I do.
This is her vocal cords, and so many, and that's voice talent and voice actors. That's their livelihood. And that's what you're relying on. And even musicians and other people where their voice is,
that's their thing.
So I'm glad you brought that up because I've just been really thinking a lot about that and how this can really be impactful for this community. So I wanted to kind of hand it over to you for a moment. And one thing that you mentioned last week too when we talked is maintaining the art of voice. And so I put that on the slide because I think that's so important. What you do, what the voice over and voice actor community, it is an art. And so how to maintain that. And from your perspective, what do voice talent need to know? And I know that we have several who have joined this webinar. So just super excited to just hand it over to you to talk through this a little bit.
Well, I think, number one is really just, I I needed to become familiar with the technology myself in order to understand it and figure out how, you know, what can I do to continue my business and grow my business while AI synthetic voices are coming and they're happening. I mean, I'm not necessarily going to stop them at all. So what I want to do is I want to be able to work alongside it. And I think a lot of voice talent right now are so... probably and not, you know, not without warrant, they're very fearful that it's going to take away their livelihood. And I part of the reason why I did a, you know, 30 episode series on AI and voice was to try to bring that education to the community. And I think that the people who have reached out to me and have, you know, have listened to those have thanked me for the education, and they said it made them feel more comfortable. And I think that's the very first thing that we need to do is again, like we mentioned in the beginning, education to make people feel more comfortable, to figure out how we can actually work alongside. A lot of times there's you know, who owns that voice? They're very fearful that something that, let's say maybe with a TikTok case, that could happen to them. And, you know, not unlike how we work today, where every job that we do, we're negotiating terms, we're negotiating usage. And I think that is probably one of the most important things that we do for our real voice. And I think that needs to extend to an AI voice. I feel if we understand that we have control of where and how this voice is going to be used, that we will be able to more comfortably navigate having a synthetic voice, as long as we can work with companies that aren't going to take our voice and turn it into a deep fake or do something, you know, that would not represent our brand. Those are the things that need to be addressed. Like, how will we contract our voice for commercial use, our AI voice for commercial use? And also, how will we ensure that that voice will not be, you know, used in some fashion? How will we know? You know, right now, if we do a commercial that's broadcast, you know, specifically for a specific region, maybe in the Northeast, and all of a sudden somebody hears that commercial out, you know, in California, the only way we know is if somebody says, hey, I heard you on the air the other day. And so we really need to have a way to be able to trace that AI voice back to us, so that there's maybe some sort of a vocal footprint. And I'm quite sure there's technology there that can do that now. I think that once voice talent know that is one of the safeguards and they're working with a company that can help protect them in that way, I think that will make them feel a lot better. And I also think that if you're working with a company that's willing to negotiate the usage of the voice, depending on, is it going to be for commercial? Is it going to be for e-learning? Is it going to be, you know, on digital media only? How and where is that going to be heard? I think that will make us feel a whole lot more comfortable, and really just the guarantee that, you know, our voices aren't going to be used for malicious intent, and that we get fair compensation. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I will mention, a lot of voice talent don't understand the extent of the technology, because we basically go in our studios and we, you know, we do our voiceovers. We, you know, we record audio, and that's what we do, and that becomes a product of what we do in our studio. An AI voice, I, you know, sometimes have to keep remembering that an AI voice is generated not in our studio necessarily, right? We might record the prompts in our studio. However, the actual generation of that audio file is done on a computer somewhere, a server that's using an engine. And that then becomes, instead of the voice talent, you know, getting 100% of that, you know, of that revenue, I think that it now becomes a revenue share with the company that they're working with. And I think that's something that needs to be understood by the community as well. And the fact is that if it is being used for, you know, a particular job, once you've made that voice, we really have not, you don't have to do anything, right? It's simply generated audio where you are then sharing revenue with the marketer, you know, the marketing company or the company in which made your voice. So I think all of those things combined has really helped me feel more comfortable as a voice talent in actually adding, you know, a potential AI voice to my tool bag.
Sean, any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I think I love what Anne's saying. I mean, she's absolutely right. It the person who lends their voice to these type of opportunities, it's their voice, it's their opportunity. And to kind of that point, you know, there's nothing wrong. Passive income is wonderful.
Yeah.
To be able to have it. And, it is. You know, and I think one of the things too is, you know, as Anne mentioned early on, like the voice is their tool, it's their instrument. Well, you know, that does change over time. Mm-hmm. And despite being sick, I'm able to do that. But, you know, if your voice is in a particular area and it's ripe, like, you can have different versions of your own clone that can be for other things as your voice changes. Like, how someone may want to be an announcer and have a very specific announcer, like, boy, it could be very different than a storytelling or a book reading or the other. So, you know, there are different varieties in which they can have and be used for and be, you know, you're making yourself more accessible by having
it. Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to, I think, something that's on everybody's mind is, and something that we've talked about a bit about already, but protecting the talent and also protecting the consumers. And first and foremost, and we've already said it, but approval from that IP owner. And we require, and I know a lot of our, you know, esteemed other vendors out there require audio and written consent. Just super critical. And for the living, that's the individual, the talent, their audio and written consent. And then for the deceased, of course, that's their estate. And other protective measures that the industry vendors and other good players in the industry are taking is, you know, content claiming, disclosures, not trying to fool or trick the consumers in any way, the inaudible watermark, and licensing protocols, and also traceability. So Anne, I would love to get kind of how that sits with you and then how you think that sits with sits with the voice over industry. And then Sean, I would love for you to provide just kind of more detail for the audience as well on those.
Well, first of all, I mean, I love everything there. I think I might have just said that. Everything, you know, that you just listed out here was exactly what I am thinking. It makes us feel more comfortable in the voice industry to create a synthetic voice. Absolutely, the audio and written consent, you know, the disclosure. And I think you're right for both, you know, how is this being used? What is the content that is being said? I think that's important. And again, I think the only thing that I would say here is I want that to be per job, and that may or may not be, you know, I don't know if that's calculated into all of this, but I think a per job is very important there, because, you know, we have all different types of jobs and all different types of usages. So I think that however that is negotiated, it is negotiated for each and every job that is commercially, you know, that has commercial use of the voice. And absolutely love the traceability. The inaudible watermark is, I wish we had that, you know, 20 years ago. I wish we could have done that. So yeah, absolutely. If that is, you know, everything that is guaranteed to the voice talent, I think that they're going to feel a lot more comfortable in, you know, considering having a synthetic voice. In addition to, again, you know, that knowledge that I don't think that AI voice is going to, you know, take over all of their jobs at all. I think there's still that artistic element of the human that is directable, right? Right now, it's a little hard to direct an AI voice, and it's even hard to tweak an AI voice, I think, you know, to make it sound, to have a little more rhythmic, you know, to make it sound more authentic and believable. I think there are some tools there that you need to use to tweak it a little bit. I think that absolutely, this could be something that more people would entertain if they knew of it. Absolutely, in the voice industry. Yeah.
No, I mean, Ashley and Anne, I completely agree. I mean, at the end of the day, everything has to start and almost end with consent. Mm. Like, if you do not have the consent, you just because you can doesn't mean you should. And you have to have the consent of that person, because everything from that point is authorized usage. And I think that what's come down, like, nobody wants to trick a consumer. You know, everyone likes to be able to say, hey, that's pretty cool. I'd like to hear that again, or I'd like to see that again. And just showing that this is viable, but doing that, but knowing that it's an authorized usage of it is paramount. And knowing that this person has said, yes, I've agreed for this clone of my voice to be created, and I've given authorization of my clone to be given to this use case, is great. Because everything from that point starts with the consent and authorization. You know, the disclosure, the watermark, the licensing protocols, the traceability of all those things should be considered table stakes. But you can't even have that until you have consent. Mm-hmm. And again, I think I can't stress that enough, because I think, you know, when this is probably, when you've heard the term AI, there's so many people associate it differently. You know, some may be associated to a chatbot when you're online, or to something else for another uses. But this one can really hit close to home for people. And because it's like, wow, okay, this is me. And it becomes infinitely less scarier when you know that, oh, okay, I know that this, I've given this, I know that it's done. And hey, I have the authority to be able to see who has authorized and access to this. Okay, I feel much better about this.
Yeah. I think one thing that I do want to, the one thing that I think is, you know, really kind of very cool too, is the speech to speech, you know, to be honest, makes me a little nervous, only because I want the model, the person who provides, the actor that provides the model, to also have a part, have a revenue share, have, you know, a copyright in that whole model, in addition to the voice. And I would hope that that is something that can be addressed as well as that, because that's a little bit, now I've lost a little bit of control of, you know, where I feel I might lose a little bit of control if I don't know where that model is of me. Where's that data model? How is that copyrighted? How is that traced? How do I know how many uses has been on that? I mean, I would imagine that if it were contained on the company's server or wherever it is, and then there's, you know, trackability in terms of who is using that, I think that would make me feel a little bit better. Or if it gets, you know, does it get sold to other companies? Like, how does that, you know, how would that work?
No, at the end of the day, it's the same thing. If your voice, if you've had authorization for the modalities of speech to speech and text to speech of your voice, you know, it still comes down to that on the per job or per uses basis that you've given, provided access or authorization for this group to be able to use it. This is how they're going to use it. And from those. So regardless of, I could do those, thinking of text to speech and speech to speech, and then just the voiceover talent itself, consider it three modalities. There's Anne in her studio, and there's the text-to-speech Anne, and then there's a speech-to-speech Anne. In all three cases, Anne's deciding what Anne wants to do and how and who has access to it. And yes, obviously, kind of revenue share and everything, you know, opportunities and job dictate everything.
Yeah, yeah. Again, and like you said, I don't know anybody that would argue with passive income. That's just, you know, I think that's a big, it's a big thing, you know, in the voiceover industry. It's always like, you know, know your worth and understand, right, your voice and what it's worth in terms of brand endorsement or representing a company. So I know that in that case, when it starts to feel less in my studio, right, and further away, and now my voice is somewhere else. It's on a server. It's, you know, and now it's a model. It's a data model. So where is that, and how do I know when it's used? So I know that is going to, it takes away the control from, let's say, a voice talent, or it takes away the perception of control. And so I think that these absolutely have these, protecting the talent, all of these points here need to take place for all of that in order for us to feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. I love that, know your worth. And something that we've been saying just, you know, recently is own your clone. And it sounds
but
it's just like, you have control over this. Like, this is, you know, you're owning this, you have control. And now adding the know your worth. I love that. This leads us to our final slide before the live Q&A. So hopefully people hang tight for that. You know, we didn't talk a whole lot about Veritone's tech specifically here. But anytime we're talking about this and kind of taking a more serious tone, is we take the use and application of AI very seriously as a company since our inception. And with voice cloning, we're like hyper on it. You know, it should always be used in a way that's, again, clear, compliant, and consenting. Like, as Sean said, like, cannot stress that enough. And the other, I'll say, I think I said before, but good players in the industry, because as we know, there are some not so good or bad players in the industry. We'll always protect the voice talent's identity, any IP created with our technology, And we are active members of the IAB and the Open Voice Network. And I know you are as well, in a group of just highly respectable individuals coming together across the world, coming up with these global best practices around synthetic media, because it's just, it's so important that we instill these best practices. So I wanted to kind of close on that, but Anne and Sean, I would love any closing remarks from you before we move into the live Q&A.
Sure. I think my only thing I'd say here is this is incredibly important, and why, you know, for at least from Veritone and Marvel.ai, it's all about the consent and the authorization for those, because, you know, I remember early on, you know, Ryan giving and hearing him give the kind of a story around how when the mouse first came out and you started to use a mouse and how that was awkward versus using command keys. And I vividly remember like having my mouse was plugged in on my old Apple and going in and saying it felt different than the command keys. And that always kind of resonated with me, because voice is now that same thing. You know, we're interacting with voice right now. We're interacting with our IoT devices, with Siri, with our phones. It's coming to our cars. It's around our house. It's with our computers. I mean, it's here and it's coming faster. And so having those highest standards and those and the security and transparency around those things is paramount. Like we have to know that. We have to understand it. It's all around us today, but it's growing at a rapid pace. And I'm really proud that, you know, all of us are part of these initiatives that are taking place, because, you know, when we talk about getting everyone comfortable, but at the end of the day, protecting the consumers and protecting everyone's voices, these are things that cannot be taken lightly, and we need to look at rigorously to make sure that we're upholding to the highest standards.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I'm thinking that the technology is coming faster almost than these global standards. So absolutely, I agree that I think the technology might be happening faster than the standards are being produced, but I'm absolutely excited about being on the ground floor of it to help define it. And that's what's exciting and challenging to me in being kind of in the forefront of this technology as it evolves. To me, I just think that, you know, I always like to think of how AI is going to help humanity and how maybe my voice, maybe my synthetic voice can help. And that to me means so much as an actor, as an artist. And I'm proud to be a part of the ground floor moving forward and helping to define some of these standards and how we can all move and profit and actually benefit from synthetic voices.
Yeah, I mean, I think we said in the beginning, I think Sean said, like, the technology's it's here. It's here. And I'm so impressed by you leaning into this. And I've been listening to your shows on VO Boss. And, you know, I know when I was approached with this role, I was like, yes, I want to lean into this technology. I want to be part of this, because it's not going away, and I want to understand it and know how it can be used for good and bring forth all the, you know, beneficial outputs. And so, yeah, I just am so impressed by you and want to thank you again for being here with us today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much, Sean, too.
Okay. And now we will switch to the live portion for a live Q&A. We've received a lot of questions, so we are super excited to get to those. Okay, first question from Carrie. Are deepfakes real or just a hyped media phenomena? How often does that happen in real life for ordinary citizens or smaller than glamorous, not Fortune 500 businesses?
I'll go ahead and take that one first. I mean, again, deepfakes are real and they're prevalent today. Most of the ones that we're seeing and hear a lot about of are either used in cinema or they're more of a, we'll call it a viral phenomenon. You know, there's the Tom Cruise TikTok that's not really Tom Cruise. So they're here today. And again, going back to kind of what we touched on earlier, you know, a deepfake, in our opinion, is an unauthorized usage of it. But being able to use it today, I mean, Ashley started off the webinar with that example of Reese Beecher that used with The Mandalorian,
where, you know, that was, you know, a cloned version of Mark Hamill's younger voice, obviously very different than he is today, but being able to use that in real life. And, you know, so those are examples there today. You're probably experiencing it in some degree when you're interacting with an IVR system or those, you know, a phone tree when you're dialing to your bank or to your healthcare provider. I mean, they're here in day, but what's growing rapidly is the realism of the voices and what we can use there. And because it's becoming much more real, how then we can start to expand upon that into other more traditional cases that we're seeing, you know, more readily in our lives.
Yeah, I'd like to just, you know, point out the TikTok case where there was a voice talent's voice that was used that was placed on the, you know, the list that people could select. And so we don't know exactly the extent. I know of, you know, certain cases where her voice was used, you know, in multiple instances, but we don't necessarily know about all of those videos that were generated. So, I mean, that's absolutely something that was real world and it happened. And we're thankful that case was settled so that, you know, we can have standards set, we can have laws in place so that our voices aren't used without our consent. And again, I guess the scary part of it is that we don't necessarily know, like, where that was used and what did they, you know, have that AI voice say. So it's real, it's here. But I don't want to shy away. I want to make sure that we develop standards and policies and laws, to protect us.
Yeah, for sure. And that actually, leads into the next question from Lydia. How will the IP of individuals' likeness and voices be dealt with? Will people be licensing the rights to their image slash voice? What happens if someone's image slash voice is being used without their permission? If so, what recourse do they have? I'll start off by saying we are not attorneys, but I think we definitely have something to say here.
Yeah, and I think, again, not attorneys here, but I mean, we take a firm belief that, you know, everything for us, and we've said it at almost ad nauseum during the webinar, is consent. You know, and from our standpoint with Marvel.as, we require anyone that's having a clone in any modality of their voice being made that they give both written and verbal consent. That they're aware that they've given authorization to the VIS to be correct, that they are the owners and given or have authority to be able to provide the training data in order to create it, that they're knowingly aware that we make sure that the voice that we're given and the verbal consent matches the voice that we're given in the training data. And because we take that, as we said, we take that very seriously. And we want to make sure then at that point, if they want to give authorization of that, who and what and how that voice can be authorized, you know, that is at the person's voice to be able to decide. So, and, you know, using as an example, if her clone voice is there, you know, we're going to need to make sure that she's aware of any and everyone that is requesting or has access to that voice, or that she's provided very rigorous parameters in which how her voice can and be used and by whom.
Yeah, and I'd like to point out that, you know, voice talent, anybody that lends their voice for a synthetic or AI generation of a voice really needs to, I guess, investigate the company that they're working with that's generating that voice. You know, are there policies? You know, how are they dealing with voices that exist already on their system? How are they treating them? And, you know, I highly recommend, you know, for any contract that you're working with in terms of generating a voice or selling that voice, you know, make sure that you have, you know, some sort of legal representation or an agent or somebody that's looking over those contracts to make sure that you are protected. It is in your very best interest. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there, you know, that are generating voices, and I want to be assured that, you know, just like Veritone, that my voice is protected, and that, you know, my best interests are in their best interests as well in terms of protecting my voice and making sure that I get, you know, equitable payment and treatment.
That's great advice. Absolutely. The next question from Carlos: what are the copyright issues to be aware of while using voice cloning?
I mean, I think that, again, comes back to almost on a case-by-case basis. I mean, what are you using the synthetic voice for, first and foremost? You know, and how, what is that, everything starts and ends, like, what is that content? and what's going to be, because it's going to be just very similar to anything else that you're doing in content creation. You know, we have a lot of experience within the Veritones division that does content licensing specifically, is who owns that content. You know, Anne does a lot of recording in her own studio that she owns. It's her content. So she's you know, it's the IP of her voice, but also the content that she's created there that's hers. You know, it could be very different for, you know, if you're an actor and you've created a lot of stuff, but that content and that may be owned by a studio or by a production company. You know, there's a, you need to have an understanding of what content specifically it's being used or how it's being used for, and ultimately who's the owner of that content.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, as voice talent every day, every job we, you know, we take on, I mean, we are determining usage and we are negotiating, you know, we're negotiating terms for that usage. And so it's no different with a synthetic voice, really. You know, it's where and how is that going to be used, and, you know, for how long, that kind of thing. So all of that is very similar. We're very used to, you know, quoting projects like that, or having our agents, you know, help to negotiate that for us. And so I think it's no different for an AI voice.
Right. Sure. And this one from Dave, one of the concerns I have is that AI could be used to create convincing audio deepfake of someone's voice and make use of it after the person in question is deceased. Are there protections in place to prevent this from happening?
That's a great question that's there. And, you know, candidly, we've been approached by a lot of different groups as far as for different reasons and different use cases to kind of use and bring back a former person of I guess famous person's voice for specific use cases. And the same thing goes for this use case, at least as, you know, Veritone and Marvel.ai stance, is that it starts with the consent. So, you know, we're requested consent from either the estate, the widow, whoever has the authority to be able to make that decision. And then the same thing that we'll go to with the training data to be used. You know, do we have consent to be able to use that that content to be able to help create the voice?
And this goes back to Anne's point too of really researching the vendor that you're working with, asking them all these questions and make sure that they have the good answers for you, and move on to the next one if they don't.
I think also, if I might add, it's important for the voice talent, you know, obviously to have control and ownership of their voice. And also if they choose not to continue with that synthetic voice, that they have, you know, they have the option of saying, that's it, you know, I'm done, destroy the data, right? So that their model no longer belongs on that server or that, you know, or that engine, and that their voice is destroyed as well. So that can ensure that, you know, your voice is not going to be used without your consent, if, you know, that's it.
Right. Eliza, I think you asked a couple more questions during. So first one, how can voice cloning be used for localization and educational purposes, i.e. shifting from various accents in English, or training practitioners to recognize accents, particularly in English?
Geez, I mean, that's a wonderful question. And I mean, I think it's a lot more broader than just education. Education is a very specific use case that can and be used for. But, you know, when we're thinking about this, you know, localization is to me one of the more exciting things about it, because there's a certain amount of personalization that can come from that localization aspect, and how someone may respond to, you know, different voices or different styles or different dialects of the same. And I think, you know, she's highlighting on a great example, like, yes, you could take the same curriculum that could be done and provide different variations of the voice, you know, if it's going to stop with maybe a little bit more of a Southern accent or Southern drawl, or being able to speak in more of a, call it a New England accent. I mean, there are probably 15 different variations that we could use just in America alone that could be very specific and localized to these different regions. And I think, you know, with synthetic voice and the different modalities of text to speech and speech to speech can really create a much more personalized experience. And the more personalized or localized it can be, the more impactful it can be to that consumer, that individual, for something like education. I think is extremely important, because you're getting that engagement, and with better engagement, you're hopefully getting better learnings and a better education.
I, I love the use of it for education, because I was a former educator in the system for 20 years, and there's so much material out there that could be utilized online and be used as resources, and it just has, there's teachers are busy. and it's just, we can't do it all, which I would love to say you could, but this can really be a help to, you know, having content available, educational content available in multiple languages everywhere. And that to me is, oh, that's like, I love that. You know, just having that availability. And it, I think I read some statistic that there's 47 million books on Amazon, but only 300,000 of them that are actually in audible format. So I feel like, you know, just generation of more content to make it available to all is a really exciting development.
Oh, yeah. Opens up so much.
Mm-hmm.
Now, moving into questions we received during the webinar from Mike. I work with a lot of celebrity talent. How do you propose to sell the idea of using a synthetic voice for voiceover, ADR, et cetera?
How do we intend to sell? Was that the question?
How do you propose? I think he's asking for himself. Like, he works with a lot of celebrity talent. How do you propose to sell the idea? How would he sell the idea of using a synthetic voice, you know, with some of the celebrities that he's working with?
Oh, that's great. I mean, I think for them, accessibility of their talent that's there. I mean, as Anne was mentioning earlier, there's certain jobs that, you know, there's ebbs and flows to her season and her workload. And there may be five or six that come in at one time. And, you know, maybe you're having to pick one or two of those. But being able to have the accessibility to make that voice available for other opportunities, you know, as long as your talent is giving you the authorization and consent to engage in their synthetic clone to be able to create these, you know, I think you're creating more opportunities for them.
Right. Yeah, I think it really allows you to optimize your talent, so to speak. Right, those things that may not demand artistry as much. Right, like maybe a chatbot or, you know, some short form, but then, you know, allowing yourself to be available for the stuff that really requires the human and the artist. I think that just gives you more time to pursue those. I mean, I it's like that, you know, essentially like the basic description is let's get AI to help us with the repetitive tasks that maybe don't, you know, we don't want to, that take a lot of our time, and allow us to just go and do wonderful, amazing things, you know, beyond that, so that we don't, you know, we have that time available to us now.
Right. Yeah. Great perspective. From another one from Eliza. How do we logistically control how someone's individual voice print is used? What policy or tech frameworks need to be in place so that this tech isn't abused?
I'm just going to say contracts. Contracts for every single job that just specify this is what it's used for. It's only used for this job. It's only used for this long, and only for this particular company. And that's it. And once that's done, we get paid and we go on to the next. I mean, I'm not trying to make it sound so simple, but that's literally what we do anyway right now. And I think that it has to extend to our synthetic voice. And we need, so as voice talent, we can negotiate that, but we really could use somebody to help us as well. Like I said, it's really, you know, we can use agents. I mean, that's what we use our agents for now. So if our agents can help us to, you know, handle that and negotiate those contracts and allow us again to, you know, we can go and be artists and have somebody just on the watch and protecting us at all times and negotiating those deals, I think that would be amazing. So,
and to the second side of that, and make sure that you have the right, you know, partner that has the appropriate platform that can make sure that there's the right rules and authentications in place so that we can really govern who has access and who granted the person can grant access to for their voice. I think there's the other side of it. It's, you know, it's and then the technical components.
Right. There's the artist. There's the artist. There's the person that's handling the management, the negotiation, the contracts. And then there is obviously there's the company that's you know, hosting the voice and allowing that to be used, you know, on a regular basis.
100%. This one from Janice. Hi, Janice. How can we build voice commerce for security given this tool is already out there with bad actors?
Well, all right. If I can, so I'll start with that one. I think that, you know, there hasn't been, as far as I know, it's just beginning. Like, it's, you know, in its infancy. So what's out there now is the evolution of the voices as they get better and better and better. And anything that you're hearing now is kind of what, oh, here, test it out. This is what the voice sounds like here from this company. And I've heard all variations of voices. I've heard some really bad ones and I've heard some really great ones. And I think it really depends at what level the company is at in terms of developing those voices and refining. And I'm sure, Sean, you can talk to more about that.
Yeah, I was gonna, you know, when you're highlight, best way to say it, if you taking a clone of a broadcaster's voice, that could be loud and very pronounced and have a lot of those, and you want them to clone them to use a bedtime story, you know, you might not have the right type of experience that's there. So again, I think, you know, what we've realized and how this technology is evolving so quickly is being able to kind of create them specifically in other use cases. You know, if you're taking a standard voice and you're making a recording and you're just using it in a text-to-speech, you know, you may get something that's going to sound much more computer-like. You know, there are text editing components and things you can do to help improve the quality of it. But that, for example, that's where speech-to-speech can come in, where you can take a little bit more of the personality, the tone, the inflection, the speed, the cadence in which someone's speaking, and create something that's going to be a lot more realistic. That's those. But also, again, if it coming down to it, it's like, look, I am a famous, you know, announcer for sports. You know, I know a lot of different use cases that I could do. I could, you know, I could have my voice cloned. I could use it for, you know, some play-by-play ones using text as an input function. I could make that accessible into video games. I could make it accessible into online ones where my voice is going to be used in that kind of specific type of use case. And you're going to have a much better experience. I mean, it kind of comes back to that old saying of like garbage in, garbage out. If you have really poor training data, or you have training data that you're trying to use for a different use case other than what it's done for, you may not have the right or the best experience possible. But if you have really high quality training data or audio recordings in this case that have a lot of range and have a lot of different tonalities and different utterances, you're going to have a much more comprehensive way, synthetic clone voice that you can use for a variety of different use cases.
I'm just going to say, I think it all comes down to better data. And more data to refine your voice and make it better. I know there's a lot of companies out there that just, the more data you feed it of your voice, the better it gets, the more it learns.
Yeah, spot on. And that's related to Mike's question. This next one is, how is AI improving on emoting and using inflection to make performance more natural? So I think we kind of just covered that, but could provide a bit more detail there.
Yeah, I think, you know, in those ones here, kind of to those point where, you know, text editors and really speech to speech can really provide a lot of kind of that personality that you want to lend to a synthetic voice.
Mm-hmm. And I think it takes a good actor. It takes a good actor to make a good, you know, to make a good synthetic voice. Because, you know, you're putting all that data in. Sometimes that data means something. Sometimes it's just arbitrary words. And, you know, you have to be a great actor and interpret that in the way that you want that voice to sound, ultimately, when you're just stringing together words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Case in point, you know, in this webinar, you're kind of all just hearing and learning that Anne's synthetic voice will come out way better than my synthetic voice will come out. just because she's much better at, you know, she's a professional speaker. And she's great. She's got the right equipment. She's got the right tools. You know, she has the professional microphone. I'm talking into my laptop. You know, all of these are just different things that can change the quality of what that synthetic voice can be. And you know, we're experiencing some of that right now.
Yeah, 100%. This one from Ken. How do we keep this out of the hands of bad actors? I'm approaching this from an archival documentary point of view. I have minimal problem with revoicing a Star Wars actor, but what happens when you start synthetically replacing the voiceover of a newscaster over a news story? Fake visual is a whole other problem, but how do we keep Frankenstein's monster in the lab? It seems as if it's too late.
Well, keeping Frankenstein in the lab, I mean, to expand of being those, like, it's, you know, how do you want to build your Frankenstein, and what do you want your Frankenstein to be used for? I mean, it's Halloween, so it's a perfect time to use that model or use that example. It all starts with, what is my intent? How do I want to use a synthetic voice? And you know, we talked a lot about all the different good use cases for it. You know, as you know, it's, you know, to use Ashley's, you know, quote that she referenced from CBS News earlier in this, you know, the technology is neutral, and there's a lot of good and that we can use for this. But let's, you know, start fundamentally as, you know, what is my project? You know, what is the problem that I want to solve? How can synthetic voice do that? And what is the right voice that I need to lend to this project? And, you know, having the answers to all of those three will really determine all the next and appropriate steps that, you know, everyone needs to take in order to bring that into reality.
Well, I love that question. Number one, how do I keep bad actors? Pay them what they're worth, right? That's about all I can say is pay them and they will come. And they will come and you will have wonderful actors making their voices.
And this from JT. What are the reasonable, ethical, and legal requirements and methods to disclose when and how synthetic content is being used?
Well, again, you know, we're not attorneys, clarifying mm-hmm. that again here. But this is, I think, what we're all striving for in using industry partners like the Open Voice Network and others, because these are the standards that collectively as a group we're trying to create and mm-hmm. make sure that we can hold ourselves and others accountable to making sure that those standards are not just being met but exceeded.
Yeah, we're in the process right now in developing those contract terms that will be helpful for synthetic voices in the Open Voice Network.
Editor, I'm so sorry if I did not pronounce that correctly. Thank you for the webinar. Who owns the IP of the created AI synthetic voice? Is it the client or the AI technology company?
Well, that's a great question, and I can't speak for behalf of the industry or the providers that's there. You can create a synthetic clone of your voice, and depending on where and who, it may only be able to be expensive or deployed within that particular provider's group. So while you as the provider and the owner of the voice clone should have authority to be able to use it, to give authority to it, doesn't necessarily mean you may get to take it with you. So at that case, you know, they may have the IP of how you created the clone voice, the technology that created it. The actual output be yours. I can't speak for other providers and what everyone is doing in this space. You should be able to have your clone, have the authority to be able to authorize who you want to have it to. And if you're done or if you don't want to have that there, have the ability to make sure that that is no longer made available and used or, you know, decommissioned.
I think there's an extra step in there too that is being worked out now, and that is, you know, there's an AI voice that is generated, but then there's also some production or some, you know, some tweaking of that voice to make it maybe more of, you know, appropriate for the spot, and I think that there's a level of work to be done there by a production person, and I don't know quite where that exists, if that's going to be me as a voice talent or if it might be a production company that works on it as well. Just some thoughts, because I do know that sometimes just the generation of the AI voice right now, it can use a little bit of tweaking in terms of maybe rhythm, pacing, you know, maybe some pitch inflections, that sort of thing. So I'm not quite sure where that lies. I think it you absolutely have to start with a good relationship with a company that develops AI voices or synthetic voices. And again, we're on the ground floor of this, and I find that to be exciting because that allows me the opportunity to help define those terms with the company, as long as I have a company that's willing to work with me. And like I said, I really kind of like the question that said, how do I not get bad actors? Well, I think that, you know, good actors are needed, right, to create great synthetic voices. And so I like that because I'd like to consider myself to be a person that would be in demand to create a great synthetic voice. And so, like I said, I want to work as a partner with a company that's going to take my interest at heart, and then work together to, you know, be able to utilize that voice in many ways.
Yes, very much so. From Mike, I think we only have time for a few more. So I'm so sorry if we can't get to all of them because these are really great. Mike, as an audio engineer, I'm really interested in this technology for fixing glitches, production noise, pickups, or other type of replacement in animation or live action TV and film. How long does it take to train the AI to create a clone when the actor does give permission?
Oh, it's a great question, and it's a fantastic and real life use case right there. You know, if there's you know, small little mistakes that need to be corrected, you know, it's much easier to use it this way than trying to get the talent directly back into the studio. So it's definitely there. So again, coming down, you know, assuming that you have perfect or, you know, very good, you know, training data and high quality training data, from a text to speech, it can take anywhere from, you know, 3 to 7 days to have that created. From a speech to speech standpoint, it can take anywhere from, you know, 10 days to 14 days. Kind of just depends on the subtle nuances of no one's voice is the same. And making sure that, you know, there's enough time in there to be able to review and make sure that the voice has a high enough quality for the project that's being used. And maybe, you know, if you need to feed it more data in order to improve it or make it better. But typically on those different modalities, it can be as little as 3 to 4 days to upwards of about 2 weeks.
Somebody says, seems like Bart Simpson could live forever as a 10-year-old boy. Thank you.
Well, Nancy Cartwright would really probably appreciate that Bart Simpson would be able to live forever.
We're getting a lot of thank yous, and some of the other ones I think that we covered. If not, please feel free to contact us. You can actually simply type in marvel.ai, which will bring you to the webpage, and contact us through that form. You're also welcome to use the info@veritone.com. We appreciate you and those that have hung on this long. We still have quite a few of you on, so we really appreciate it. Please keep in touch. Welcome to, you know, looking forward to connecting with you, collaborating with you. And yes, and thanks again, Anne, for your time over the past couple of weeks. And Sean, any closing remarks from you as well?
No, I just thank you everybody for the time and for the questions and the engagement. This was fantastic. And Anne, thank you very much for your expertise and your time.
Thank you.
Just generously lend it to us and to help help us get rid of that stigma of deepfakes.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks so much, everyone. Have a good rest of your day.
Bye. You now have a better understanding of deepfake and synthetic voice and how it can indeed be used for good. Thank you all for listening to Adventures in AI, the podcast that dives into the many ways artificial intelligence is shaping the future for the better. Talk with you next time.